From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. We've done several shows recently about Springfield Public Schools. In fact, we've done more shows about that district than any other, and with good reason. There has been an outsized number of challenges and controversies swirling around Springfield schools. Well, today we bring you one more story, and this is an introduction of sorts to the individual who will try and calm the waters at the beleaguered district. His name is Dr. Sean Stover, and he is decidedly an outsider, having run districts and other communities around the nation. His first job as the interim superintendent is to restore trust among staff, students, and parents while working with a board that some describe as dysfunctional. It's a tough job, but if he succeeds, it might set the district on a course of much smoother sailing. That's next on Oregon on the Record. To be charitable, Springfield Public Schools is not the only district in our community and state that's dealing with big challenges right now. Most districts are having to navigate stress budgets and declining enrollment, but Springfield seems to be specializing in drama and dysfunction, having cycled through board members and a superintendent and dealing with anger and mistrust at every level. Today on the show, we'll introduce you to the new interim superintendent who is being brought in to try and bring stability and calm to a district under intense scrutiny. Dr. Sean Stover, the new interim superintendent for Springfield Public Schools. Dr. Stover, thanks so much for coming in.
Michael, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Just why don't you give our audience kind of a brief overview of where you're from, what you've done, that sort of a thing.
Oh, gosh, I'm from everywhere and done lots of things.
Okay.
I first came into teaching in 1990. I was with the Charter Corps of Teach for America.
Okay.
And I was bought into the idea that, you know, you shouldn't go into education as a professional. There's really no outcome in it. And through a series of events, I opened up my college newspaper and said, "Who will teach for America?" And I said, "Maybe I will." And so I did an interview. I was a swim instructor, did a practice teaching session on the elementary backstroke movements. And was placed in Los Angeles, was going to be there. I was also the first transfer in the history of Teach for America. I missed my girlfriend, who's now my wife of 35 years at the time.
And okay.
So rural North Carolina was one of the places they were placing. And so I started my career in North Carolina, taught for 6 years, was Teacher of the Year for my district after my third year, then went on to be a principal, assistant principal across North Carolina. Actually went back to work for Teach for America and teacher support and development. The 2 years that the core members, their commitment, we provided them their training and development, further development. Became a superintendent of a charter school district in Texas for 3 years and then moved to DC Public Schools, was an area superintendent. Mm-hmm. And then because of an NPR investigation in D.C., became the chief of secondary schools.
Okay,
in D.C.
Okay. What was it like transitioning from being a teacher to moving into administration?
Gosh, you know, no one has ever asked me that question. There's a lot of the same things. Your class is just different. So instead of having a class of students, your class becomes the teacher. I believe it's education, schools, we're a learning organization. That at the primarily is our business. And so we should be constantly learning and teaching and learning from each other. And as a principal moving in administration, that's the way I focused on things. How can we get better together? And that's what I wanted for my students. I considered my class a community, and we always wanted to be better. I wanted to make sure when they left me, they felt loved, they felt challenged, and they felt prepared. And it's the same thing I want for the staff with whom I work. I want them to feel loved, challenged, and prepared because that will translate down to our students.
Okay. You're walking into a challenging situation, and I imagine you're walking in with eyes wide open. What attracted you about this particular job, especially given in light of what's been happening at Springfield Public Schools over the last couple of years?
Well, the challenge is one of the things that attracted me. I think the basis, I always do my research when I'm thinking about moving into a different position. And my cousin, actually, who works in 4J, is the person who notified me about the Springfield opportunity. And so I looked at it, and what I saw was a problem, but I saw a solvable problem. And the core is teachers. At the end of the day, the number one determinant of a student's success is the quality of the teacher in the classroom. And my research showed that Springfield was a district on the rise. But we were focused on our differences. And I think the differences that people are focused on, or maybe 10 to 15%, I think there's much more similarities. And I'm gonna hopefully use my voice as a superintendent and listening to everyone to bring them together. And let's focus on what we have in common and then move forward. And certainly we're going to address the conflicts, right?
Mm-hmm.
But let's think about what we have in common so that we can provide an amazing educational experience for our students.
Okay. A solvable problem. What's it about your leadership style that you think, kind of inserts you into the middle of this to bring out the best?
So this is a difficult problem for me because the person I've been married for 35 years keeps me very humble. And so I'm not really
supposed to
talk about myself. And so I'm going to have to make sure she doesn't listen to this. I've really thought about this over the course of my career. I think I make it safe for people to take risk. And I think that's one of the most important things a superintendent can do. I'm not doing a whole lot of the work. I'm creating conditions in which the work is done. And our future, we're in just such an uncertain time, and especially for our kids. And so we're going to have to take some risk. We're going to have to take some chances that we don't know what the outcome's going to be. But if we don't take those chances, we're not going to provide the future for our kids that I think we need to. So I feel people feel comfortable working around me. They know that I'm going to take responsibility for things. They know that I'm going to listen and learn from them. And I'm going to make decisions based on what I hear, not what I've done in the past.
Okay. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Sean Stover, the new interim superintendent for Springfield Public Schools. I imagine that a board can look to hire a superintendent and can look sort of one of two ways. Do I bring in someone who's from the community, or do I bring somebody who has an outsider's perspective? You're in that latter category. What are some things that you think, as someone who's worked in other districts, far-flung districts across the country, that you can bring to what Springfield needs right now?
To me, it's more of a habit, right? What I bring is a willingness to learn and listen and then use what I learn and listen to form an opinion. And I do things with the community. There is no Sean Stover way of education. My way is to deeply learn what's happening. And think about the contrast of my career. I was in D.C. What that community values is very different from the community I just left in Rockingham County, where 70% of the population voted for President Trump, for instance. And so, again, I'm good at finding the commonalities that we have and then helping bringing people together to focus on that and less on our differences.
Okay. I would also imagine that one of the key things that you're going to need to do because of what happened before you got here is earning back some trust with both staff and parents. Talk a little bit about that and how you see that going.
I love that you said that, Michael, because it's the foundation of what we do. And one of my sayings that I use a lot is trust is earned in drops and lost in buckets. And so that's why, I think there's some superintendent school or maybe some people took someone aside to say you have to have a 90-day entry plan. I'm not sure that you can learn a district, especially coming from the outside, in 90 days, right? And so my plan, which I'm going to introduce to the board or present to the board in our August meeting, is really a year-long plan. And so the first 90 to 100 days, I'm going to listen and learn with a sense of what I call awe and wonder, not having preconceived notions on what I want to hear. Then I'm going to present a report to the board saying, this is what I heard, and this is what I think we need to focus on. And then I'm going to listen and learn some more around those things that I think we need to focus on. The goal being that in around February or March or so, I'll have a pretty good opinion of where we need to do, where we need to go. As a district, I'll work with the board and staff to start creating our strategic plan from December to May.
Okay.
And the goal being in May, we'll present a plan to the public that will help guide the district for at least the next year and hopefully for some years after.
Okay. I've talked to a lot of educators, superintendents, at both the K through 12 as well as in the college levels. This enrollment cliff that I think a lot of people talk about, I want to get your read on it because you've worked in different districts. It's something that I think the community is still trying to get its arms around, that we just don't have as many kids as we used to. Talk about that as a challenge for what you need to do.
Yeah, it's we all think it's local, but it's really across the country. Mm-hmm. It's a combination of factors. First of all, there is a declining birth rate. We're having an aging population. But there's also, people are now used to being able to choose their own adventure, have what they want when they want it. And we as a public education system, we only have pockets where we're able to do that. And that's why it's so important to listen and learn to the community, to our community. One of the things I heard when I was in North Carolina, for instance, is this focus on everyone going to college is not the right thing. And so we created the first early college CTE high school. And early college is, you know, early college program, but it was focused on CTE in the state of North Carolina because I listened. In DC, we did something entirely different because I listened to what the community wanted. And we were able to stem the loss there. We still lost kids because we have an aging population. But because of what we were able to do, especially the CTE high school I talked about, we actually brought people in that were homeschooled, that went to charter schools, that were going to private schools. And North Carolina is one of the states that has the voucher. So you can get a voucher and go to wherever you want. We in education have to remember that we have to listen and serve the community. One of the things I started saying in DC and in North Carolina is enrollment's our hustle. Right? We have to, in order to do the transformative things that we are actually good at, if you look at the statistics, public schools do the best job educating kids, all kids. We got to be able to, first of all, make sure our community understands what we're doing in a way that they understand, not using a lot of education speak, and then listen and make sure what we're doing fits the values and norms of that community.
And I imagine when you're listening to staff and when you're listening to parents, they're going to bring up the mid-year layoffs and concern about what that's going to impact, you know, education, especially for next year. And I know you've just gotten the job, so you're still learning where everything is and whatnot. But I mean, in terms of that, in terms of allaying fears about what layoffs might do to the quality of education, what are some things after you listen you're going to tell them?
Well, I'm going to say we have to revere our educators. And we have to make sure that our actions match that idea of revering our educators. The number one determinant of student success is the quality of the teacher they have in the classroom. And I firmly believe the one thing, the one core belief that I have that I take with me wherever I go is the job of central office, central services, is to support our schools and our teachers. And if we can't clearly show how we're doing it and why we're doing it, then we're not really doing our jobs. Our educators have an incredibly tough job. We have kids from all levels in our classrooms. We are asked to do so much more than when in 1990 I was asked to do as a teacher. We have to understand that. We have to revere them and celebrate all that they do to even get a child ready to learn. And so I want to make sure that whatever we do, we are focused on that support.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up about your experience as an educator back in the day, because, boy, things have changed a lot since you were writing on the chalkboard. And talk about that as someone who's the boss looking at a school district where, boy, you know, social media pressure, you know, those sorts of things. How do you sort of lead so that teaching excellence can come to the fore?
Well, Mike, so it's interesting. I literally had a classroom. The school I taught in was built in 1928, and my technological advance was I used colored chalk. What it was like to teach in the classroom in 1990 is very different than teaching in classroom in 2026. And I know that. And I'm never going to get that experience as long as I'm the superintendent, but I can try to come as close to that. So one of the things that I'm going to do in my entry plan is, and what I've done in previous jobs, is I actually shadow students. I'll spend a whole day on a student schedule. I'll ask a lot of our administrators to do the same thing. I will team teach with some of our teachers. If I'm going to support our staff and our students, I have to, at some level, understand the experience and the environment in which they're working. Will I ever get that same level of appreciation that they, or the same level of experience that they have? No. But I will gain an appreciation and then some insight so that I can support them better. I have to approach the job with a huge spirit of humility. The education system I started in, and I started right at the outset, right before No Child Left Behind and all that, I've seen all those iterations of that, is very different. I don't know what it's like to teach in a COVID era classroom or post-COVID era classroom. I don't know what it's like to have the pressure of huge expectations to be everything to all people when it comes to our students, to the extent that I think some of our teachers have. But what I do know is what good teaching is and what good teachers do. Good teachers understand their students, they wrap their arms around them in love and support, and they create a program that meets that unique student's needs. And so if I can create the environment that does that for our staff, then I'm doing my job.
What help would you like to see you get, as well as the district, from the community, from parents, from the state? Obviously, budgets are really tight right now. What are some things that would help you do the best job you can do?
First of all, be honest. Tell me what you really feel. And don't think that I'm here just to check boxes or I already have figured out what I want to do, because I honestly haven't. I think from the state level, trust the educators that work in the schools, in the school system, that we know what we're doing and we have the best interest for kids in mind, and give us some flexibility. One of the things I see as a trend in education, and I have a little knowledge about Oregon, so I don't want to make this Oregon-centric, is that we manage sometimes to the least common denominator. So something happens and we create a lot of rules to keep that thing from happening. And almost invariably, that thing should have never happened. But that's one small example in the whole pantheon of education. And address that one specific thing, but don't make it a rule that affects, that has unintended consequences for all of our educators. I like to know what the rules are. I like to know what the goals are. And then I'm very confident in my ability to work with the team to achieve those goals. But the more folks tell us how to get there, the more problematic it is, because all of our kids are different. You might be going along as a teacher and you have a wonderful class, you've got it figured all out. One student coming in or even leaving a classroom changes that dynamic dramatically. We've got to give our professionals the freedom and flexibility to look at what they have in front of them, to listen and learn from them and create the situation. It's really a microcosm of what I'm trying to do on a more global level. Understand and then create a program that meets the needs of that unique situation.
Okay. I think my last question for you has to deal with your title and the fact that there is interim in front of it. Is it, and I'm not sure I understand all the machinations about what the board did, but do you want to stay longer? Is it something that you're good being the superintendent for the next year? And perhaps the idea of interim gives you more flexibility to take risks. Do with that question what you will.
It's an important question. So I came in to this with the understanding, one of the questions I was asked, would I be willing to stay if it worked out? And absolutely, I would. As I said, you know, my cousin's the one who let me know about this job. My grandfather was from Medford, Oregon. I love this area. But what I know is it has to be a good match. And so I'm looking to see if my skills match what is needed in the district. But the interim to me is, as a superintendent, you're always interim. it means I have to add, you know, a couple more letters to my title. But I don't act ever as I'm an interim. I understand that as a superintendent, every year is almost an interim year. I'm really interested in bringing this community together, listening and learning, and creating an environment where we focus on our kids, they feel loved, challenged, and prepared, and our educators feel like the work they do matters, and they matter, and they're revered by not only those whom they work with, those whom support them, but also the community. And we have such a lot of the what I feel are essential foundations in order to do that. And I'm excited to take the journey with the folks with whom I work in the community and create the best education system in Oregon.
He's Dr. Sean Stover, Interim Superintendent for Springfield Public Schools. Dr. Stover, thank you so much for coming in and talking with us.
Michael, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, you'll hear from the Associated Student President at U of O, who delivered a very controversial speech during commencement and drew the ire of the Board of Trustees. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.